Okay. Yeah, I have a boring guy. No. A topic that's pretty, we probably talked about it, maybe even this year, for sure last year. But what can I do? It's an important topic, and it's in this week's Parsha. So I got to talk about it again. The Pasuk says, the beginning of the Parsha, second Pasuk, V'chamushim odu b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim. What does Rashi say? So one shot is chamushim means they had weapons. Okay. And then he brings davar acher. Chamushim echad mechamisha. One out of five. Four out of five died. But the Medrash says there's another shot, 40 out of 50. And one shot out of, they're basically one out of 50. And there's another shot, one out of 500. So it comes out, according to the Medrash, Rashi brings it, the vast majority of B'nai Yisrael did not get to leave Mitzrayim. Either, according to Rashi, brings one out of five left. That's a pretty bad ratio. But the Medrash says it was one out of 500. That's even a lower ratio. Why didn't they get up? Because they died in the Choshev. Why? So the simple shot is because they were lacking Bitochen, Amunah. In other words, they weren't ready to go. The Medrash pretty much says it beferish, that when Hashem told them to go, so they were hesitant. I don't mean they maybe wouldn't have gone, but they were hesitant. They weren't so excited about going. Seems the Medrash explains that after the Maccas began, the Mitzrayim started being nice to the Jews. So the Jews had developed in a short amount of time. Some of them even made some nice money, and some of them were even well off, and they might have even been comfortable. And now, what we knew, all of a sudden things start going good, the stock market starts going good, and now we should quit and go into the Midbar. And what's going to be in the Midbar? How are we going to survive? So they weren't so excited. So they basically, because of that, they weren't zeichus. I heard from that B'shem Rav Chasko Levinson, he said it wasn't a punishment. It's that in order to be zeicher for the geula, you have to want it, you have to believe in it. And if they were missing in the emuna, they couldn't be zeicher. So Rav Chasko says a very, very scary thing. I think it's a scary thing. He said that there are chazals that say that the geula, hasida, follows parallelism to geula of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we think, the Mashiach is going to come, it's going to be, nice, wonderful. Mashiach will come, and everyone's going to go to Israel. He said, this is Rav Chasko. I don't want to say, I'm not going to take that price for this one. How difficult, better, something. But this is Rav Chasko said, that just like when it came from the Geula of going out of Mitzrayim, not everyone got there, not just about the people who died, the people who were alive. It went from either from one out of five to one out of 500. So when the Mashiach comes, he said it'll be the same thing. A large number of Klal Yisrael will not be zeicha to the Geula. Right? It's a scary thought, no? Yeah, it's a scary thought. Now, I don't know whether everyone agrees to that, but that's what Rav Chasko said. That a large part of Klal Yisrael will not be zeicha for the Geula. And for the same reason, because they're going to have their nice, rich, beautiful homes in America or wherever else they have. And when they're going to say, hey, we got to go to Eretz Yisrael, good. I said, what? The stock market's starting to go up. now's not a good time to go. Just when I'm starting to make a killing. I'm in the middle of a major investment. I got a big deal on the fire, and it's about to make my millions, or my 100 million, whatever it is. And you want me to go right now? On the dot? Just pick up and leave. Like, are you kidding? Give me a few weeks, a few days, a month. Maybe you can sell my assets, I don't know. Just leave everything behind and just pick up and go. Where am I going? Where? So he says that's going to be the same reaction. And it's not, so there. That's Rav Chasko Levinson said. It's a big gadol.
Everyone in Eretz Yisrael is going to be it.
Not necessarily. I don't assume there's actually the same problem too. But he said it's the Maisa, that's what he said. I can't tell you. The Maisa said that not everyone makes it. So what we got to do is, and that's why I want to talk a little bit, working on bitachin. Because according to him, it's an amish shmuz that after, you know, if you make your typical sabaka shmuz, apparently there was a chisarin of bitachin of the vast majority of Klai Yisrael. And if you make your shmuz, who are we talking about? Where are we talking about? When are we talking about? Right? We're talking about after seeing 10 miracles in the Makkos. These are like the greatest miracles in the world. And they, it took him, wasn't just like one day. Each Makkah lasts like a week. So they had 10 weeks of Nisim Gluyim, Neis Nigle, and they're still missing in Bitachin. So it basically is a shmooth that Bitachin is a very, 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 very hard. I know this was a shkafa. Many people, I told the guys many times, I think I said it probably this year too, that my recollection is Reshiva used to learn Chavis Evava Shar Bitachin in Musar Seder as long as I remember for all the years. You know, I don't remember that, I can't say for sure, but when I remember, you know, I know when I used to help him in Israel when he used to, you know, get the Musar Seder. For years and years, maybe I didn't pay attention in the beginning years, so. But for many, many years, Reshiva learned Musar Seder the same thing. Chavis Evava Shar Bitachin. Because he definitely held that bitachin is one of the hardest things to get, and bitachin is one of the most important things to get. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about bitachin, and also about the parsha. So Rav Trupp, Zatzal, Rav Trupp was Rashiva's father-in-law, has a very beautiful word on bitachin on this week's parsha. It's actually written up somewhere, but okay, in the back of one of the Chidush Aleis, in some piece. He said as follows, that we say in the Halo Agado, anyone know what Halo Agado is? Yeah, Kirei Olam Chasdo, it's called Halo Agado. We say all the different miracles that Hashem did. Makim Yisrael B'chareyem, that's Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay, Malachim, Malachim, Gedoyim, Ve'ahor Ma'agal Adirim, Sichom Merach Amori, Oy Merach Abashan. Right? So the whole thing is a whole list of many miracles, and it ends up, No Sein Lachem L'chol Basar. So there's a Gemara, a Medrash, that says that they pair that they're makish all the miracles together. So we see that the miracle of Noisem Lechem L'chol Basar, which we take for granted, sometimes it's just Derech HaTeva. I got a job, I get money, I can buy food. That's on the same level as the miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf. That's in Gemara. Koshem is a Noisem Shavadam ke Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay. So simple pshat in the Gemara is trying to point out that don't think that getting a parnasa is simple. It's a nice. Like Kriyas Yamsuf. Rav Trupp wanted to know, why did they pick on the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf? The thing is, there's full of miracles here. Everything here is a miracle. There's like 25 miracles in this capital. So why is they comparing the into particular, if you had to make a diamond to a particular miracle, they make a diamond to Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay. Don't know the kasha. Mukhlo, whatever. That was his kasha. So he said a beautiful thought. He said in the beginning, in the parsha of Kashalach, that's our parsha, the opening pasuk is Vahi b'shala paras ha'am v'lal nochem elokim derech erech plishtim, ki karofu. That Hashem didn't take them derech erech plishtim, even though it was close. Ki amar, and to the cheshbon, some reason, because ben yinochem, mecham Yisrael. So he said like this, if you're in B'nai Yisrael, you're leaving Mitzrayim, you're going to ask Mitzrayim, B'nai Yisrael, you know, you're leaving Mitzrayim, you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. What are you going to do when you get to the Yamsuf? How are you going to cross the Yamsuf? And he said, B'nai Yisrael are going to say, Yamsuf. Buddy, you got your sense of directions all messed up. We're going Derech Eretz Plishtim. You know, the shortest route. The shortest route is Derech Eretz Plishtim. And if you go Derech Eretz Plishtim, there ain't no Yamsuf. All of a sudden, hey, Moshe takes them a roundabout way, makes no sense. And not only does it make no sense to the people because it's longer, right? Why take a roundabout way and get a short way? But then there's a Yamsuf in the middle. Like, you got to be crazy. Right? So what it means is that all these Ashwin Hashem took Klaishra Mitzrayim, it was the way he did it was completely against what human Seichel would have thought is right. Human Seichel would have thought you go Derech Eretz Plishtim because it's shorter, because you don't have the Yamsuf. It's easy, it's a Machaya. Hashem takes a different route. Now, obviously, the different route was better. Pasuk says, according to Rashi, one reason, there could be other beforehand have different reasons. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a good cheshbon. But what he's saying, that what Kriyas Yamsuf teaches us is that we are not so smart. We think we know everything worked out. We know we have it all figured out. We know what's best for us. We know what's good. We know what's bad. Comes on, goes, Kriyas Yamsuf says, you think you know how to go from A to B. You don't know how to go from A to B. You think you go straight. You take the straight route. No. That's not the right route. You have to take a roundabout route. You have to go jump off a cliff. You know. He says, that's shot also commitment Zionists. People go ahead and, I remember the way he said it is, people go ahead and, you know, they leave, they get married, they get a job. They say, how are you going to support yourself? What's the problem? I'm going to go to college, I'm going to get a degree. I got it all worked out on paper. He says, it very often doesn't work. Your paper, you know, your plan don't work. Hashem, when it comes to Mizinus, Hashem takes you the way he wants to take you. Not the way you got it written on paper. Not the Karav way. Hashem, he says, you speak to many people and you'll find out. Right? This guy went to medical school and now he's a, he's a businessman. And this guy went to this and he's doing that. You know, everyone's doing a different profession. Not everyone. A lot of people. But he said, people, Parnassa doesn't work. That's what he's saying. Just like the way you think. Just like that's what Chazal is saying. Kosher is Einosav Shavadam Kriyas Yamsuf. Just like Kriyas Yamsuf, Klai Yisrael didn't have the foggiest idea what was best for them. They thought they had a simple solution of how to get out of Mitzrayim, and Hashem knows better. And Hashem takes them in a way that they don't understand, but it worked out for the best. They got amazing miracles and everything. They got Rosh Shifcha Sheyam HaShadaroi Yecheskel Ben Buzi. That was one of the greatest things that Kriyas Yamsuf. So the same thing is in Mizinus. Many things, and it's not just Mizinus, many in life, that the things, we don't know what is best for us. Anyway, that is a very big Yisrael to be talking. Because when a person thinks he knows, then you don't have to be talking. See, in order to have to be talking, the first step in be talking is to realize that you need Hashem. When you think that I don't need Hashem, I'm in control. Everything is worked out. I'm in control. I know what's best for me, and I have the ability to do it. So what I need Hashem for? Just Hashem, don't get involved. I remember the Rabbi Rami Torah said that there is by Bar Kokhva. It's a Yishalmi. When the Bar Kokhva, there was these tremendous Giborim. You know, Bar Kokhva was this tremendous Gibor, and they were fighting the Romans, and they were winning. So Bar Kokhva had a tefillah. He davened to Hashem. His tefillah was, Hashem, don't get involved. Just don't mix in. We'll take care of the Romans. We're strong enough. We're big enough. We're powerful enough. You know, I know Hashem can make miracles. He can make miracles and bad for us too. So, Hashem, just stay out. When a person, he said that was his downfall. After he davened that davening, that's when he started losing, and that's when he got killed. He said, when a person believes that I don't need Hashem, because I can do things myself, then you're in trouble. Then there's no bitachin, because I don't need Hashem, I do it myself. The first step of bitachin is the realization that life is full of unknowns. I don't know, I'm going to have to get married soon. Not me, especially you people. Right? You know, obviously, do you know who you're marrying? Do you have a foggiest idea how to find the right girl? Do you know anything about girls? Come on. I hope not. Right? But even if you thought you did, you don't. Right? The girl's going to be on the best behavior. Do you think she's going to tell you how I'm a monster? She's not going to tell you, right? And how are you going to know? So you just basically, you have to be talking. You don't know what you're doing. You know, you go out 5 dates and you get engaged. Like, you think you know something. 8 dates, okay. 8 dates, you think you know something? Because you went out 8 times with a girl on her best behavior, and you on your best behavior, and you never spoke to a girl before in your life, and you think you're going to make the right decision. It's bitachin. You're going to pick a job. You think you know what job you're going to get to. How do you know whether the boss is a nut or not a nut? Right? You're going to move into a neighborhood. How do you know that this is a good neighbor for you? How do you know who you're buying a house? You know what the next door neighbors are? You know what who the kids are? You know, there's so many unknowns that can affect your quality of life and your kid. Your kids are affected by their friends. Who lives next door? Who lives across the block? There's millions of unknowns and things. And besides, and you can take a profession, work for a job, and then that market could crash, and who knows what could happen. Right? There's so many things out of our knowledge. So when the more a person hears that we know so little, and yet guess what? We're still here. So how'd that happen? Right? Yeshiva is still around with all our financial, every time, you know, Moshe Bernstein says we're bankrupt, but we're still here. it was always that way. So it's bitachin. You have to hear that there's Hashem running the show. Right? The more you hear that when Hashem, that we don't know, that's what Rav Trump said. It's a very nice thing on this week's Parsha. That Kriyas Yamsuf was to teach us that you don't know what's good for you. Okay. Anyway, I wanted to bring in, I have this very fascinating sefer, which I don't think I brought in last time. We spoke about Bitachon, I think we did speak about before sometime. There's a sefer called Sefer Higyanus. It's a very fascinating, I do not believe it's in print. Maybe it is, I don't know. Mine is printed in Tufshin Yud Gimel, which means 1953, I think. Where did I get it from? Rabbi Meinzatzal told me when I go to Eretz Yisrael to get it. This is Rav, the father-in-law of Rav from Kamenitz, Rav Shiner's father-in-law. And I bought it from Rabbi Shiner. Rav Shiner. I bought it from him about 30 years ago. I went to his house and I bought it. He was Rav Baruch Baer's son-in-law. I think it's Rav Shiner's father-in-law. I think so. Anyway, he was Rav Baruch. I bought it from Rav Shiner, that I know. He was Rav Baruch Baer's, one of Rav Baruch Baer's son-in-laws. Rav Baruch Baer had a son-in-law, Rav Ruvain, who was Rashiv and Tarvid Das at the end of his life. And he had this son-in-law, Rav Moshe Bernstein, who made it to Eretz Yisrael. So this is a very fascinating sefer, because what he basically writes is that he got at a certain age, the doctors told him they shouldn't learn Be'ian. So I think he still learned Be'ian anyway. But the Maisa, what he did is, he wrote what was considered light Divrei Torah on Hashkafa. Now, regretfully, he didn't decide to write light Hebrew. So it's very hard to read, because his Hebrew is very difficult. But it's very fascinating sefer. So at the end of the sefer, he has the following piece. I'm going to read a little bit. In Yizdamein the Yad Chosid Kuntra Shel Higyanus, if a Chosid would get hold of this sefer, Yivakreini Koshes, he'd be very upset with me. Ki Akrei Sheyeshavti Asara Shava Shana Vebeis Admor Vekirvaso, since I lived with one of the Gedolei Ador for many years, he was a son-in-law, Lo Siparti Af Mofei Zechot, and there's not one miracle in the whole sefer. Ada told us Misnage, Yomru. This is how Misnage would write it, right? Your son, one of the Gedalia Dor, you're a Baruch Bar Sandra. You lived in his house for, I don't know, from World War One. You got married very right after World War One to World War Two. And you don't tell a single my face. So he says a beautiful chat. He says to see a my face needs a special training. You have to train him. He says, the literature world did not teach us how to see Maifsim. Lu'umazet, but on the other hand, Pitru Banu Chush Rogish, they developed in us a sensitivity, L'ri'yas Hashkacha Pratis, which I don't think we've done in this yeshiva, but that's what he said. In the literature world, they trained us to see Hashkacha Pratis. It's also a training. It's a certain skill. People, you have to have a skill to see a my face. I don't exactly know why. But for sure, he says, you have to have a skill to see Hashkacha Pratis. Which makes sense, because it's just like on a schmooze. Why do some people have so much trouble with a schmooze? Because they look at each thing independently. In order to see Hashkacha Pratis, you have to see the full picture. You have to see why, really, what should have been, and why... You know, each piece in Hashkacha Pratis makes sense, in the life makes sense. It's a Purim story, right? Everything, nothing there was Shalal B'Derech HaTeva, but the whole picture was an amazing miracle. Achashverosh gets mad at Vashti, he listens to Haman, he marries Esther, right? In the Mordechai hears about the people that want to kill the king. So each piece adds it, but it's only at the end when you look at the full picture. Now, many people don't have that kayach of seeing the full picture. So where's the my face? It's, you know, I don't see any mitzim. So it's a special training of Hashkacha Pratis. And he says that you have to develop that training. You have to work on yourself to develop. That was, he says, well, okay, I don't know, training. That's the training. You have to work on looking for it. Okay, anyway, so he brings two maisim that there are barbers, and that one, because I think it's, he brings two maisim about Rabbarach Ber. Not maisim, two Hashkacha Pratis. He brings one Hashkacha Pratis that Rabbarach Ber used to always say about himself. That when he was 11, he was by nature a very, I don't know, the word it says here, mutzban. Mutzban means very serious. Maybe even more than serious. You know, overly serious, I know. You know, a child. And it's to a point that his parents were worried about him. So with great difficulty and financial difficulty, I don't assume his parents were not so rich, they took him to one of the greatest doctors in Russia to evaluate him, who happened to come to their city. And, you know, it was great. They pushed him in. They obviously paid a lot of money, whatever. And they got him evaluated by this great professor. And the professor basically paskin that this child should not be in school. This is the worst thing for him, for his temperament. He should be in the outdoors. He should be given an outdoor profession. He should work outdoors. Ish sada zui, that's hatzlachos yechida. So when they walked out, he says his father told him, son, you're late for cheder. We already wasted an hour. And he basically sent him off to cheder. So he said he felt this was Hashkacha Pratis. You see Hashkacha Pratis anywhere. Right? So that's why you don't have the training. This is what a Baruch Ber is always Hashkacha Pratis. Because apparently he felt that Al Pidin, his parents should have, you know, if the doctor gives you advice, you're really supposed to listen to the doctor. So why didn't his parents listen to the doctor? That was a nace. Okay, Hashem went ahead. There's nothing he could do. He was a little boy. Hashem was protecting him as a little boy, keeping him away from the problem. So they made a nace that the parents wouldn't listen to the doctor. Hashkacha Pratis. Then he has a second story, Hashkacha Pratis. I don't want to get too... He says the second story is a little bit more notes to Hashkacha Pratis. He said when they're running away from World War One, so there was Mamish Pikuach Nefesh, there was the different Russian armies, killing each other, right? I don't know if you know your history. The whites and the reds and the greens and the blues, everyone's shooting each other in Russia. And they had a runner. They were deep in Russia. They ran into Russia. They were trying to come back. So they finally got on it to manage to get on a train. And, I don't know, maybe a lot of bribing, whatever, paying money. And they got onto this train. Then it says, came along some Cossacks, so some Russian soldiers, and they were jealous, and they kicked them off, took over their seats. They were in a certain car, and they kicked them out. And they're left there stranded in the middle, in no man's land, you know, the elements. Not the elements, but all the dangers. So he says he went ahead, and he was a doer. So he went and he finally found some soldiers that he knew from, they were someone from his same city that he came from. So he knew the soldier. And with a lot of bribes, like a different, in a certain different car, he bribed the soldiers that they would take him, let them all come into their car, into their, you know, their train car, you know. So they all squeeze in to this little, you know, to this train car where these soldiers are. And except they basically all get in, except for one. There was some woman that joined with them. You know, she was going back. She's going to go back too. So we don't have room for her. So they left her on the out. So the barber says, we can't leave this woman alone. He called Mavesh. So he told everyone, have to get off the train. That's it, no train. So they said the whole family and all the yeshiva guy, whatever was there, they all unloaded. They bribed the soldiers, pay off the soldiers again to help them unload, and they're sitting in the middle of no man's land. All of a sudden, he says, they get a telegram that the train shouldn't go. Because why? Because there's a special train that broke down, and they need the engine on this train to help it. So then they're going to switch, they're going to switch engines. I don't know exactly. So that was obviously first Hashgacha Pratis. Instead of being left all along the middle, you know, the train stops and waits for there from. This other train comes, and they switch engines, whatever. So it says the Cossacks that took their what do they call it, their train car, all decided they want to be in the better train. So they all left and went into the new train, and basically their old compartment became available again. So they went back to their old car where they had a nice, comfortable room. And then as the train continued, because it was maybe a weak locomotive, whatever, it couldn't pull such a long train, so they disconnected the back train cars where the second place that they went into, and all those soldiers who they made them squeeze in some little corner, they had to squeeze in to their car. You know, so they were the big Baobatim, you know. So he said that was Rabbah, but Rabbi was saying very easy Hashgacha Pratis. You do see the Hashgacha Pratis there. Okay, anyway, so in the Maisa, there is a thing, we have to work on seeing Hashgacha Pratis. You have to develop. The first thing is develop it, is to hear that we don't know what's best for us, and to see, to try and see when things unusual happen, and especially if it's unusual and it works out, to hear that it's Hashgacha Pratis. Right? You were driving a car and you should have gotten into an accident. There was something you did that was wrong. And then, no, you didn't get into an accident. You know, it's Hashgacha Pratis. Now, I've said many times that Rabbi Plushinsky used to say that, you know, World War II was the biggest Hashgacha Pratis in the world. We usually think Hashgacha Pratis is, you know, people say the fact that after World War II, when the Jews were on the bottom. That's what many people say. At World War II, the Jews were the dirt of the world. No one wanted them. You know, they were, all the countries of the world decided they should just basically let the Germans kill them. They wouldn't let them into America. They wouldn't let them anywhere, you know. And then, all of a sudden, a year or two later, 1948, which is only 2 or 3 years after the war ended, the Jews walk off with Eretz Yisrael, which is an amazing thing, because Eretz Yisrael, the Arabs and the Christian world have been fighting over who gets Eretz Yisrael for about 1,000 years. And all of a sudden, the Jews, these nobody people who have no army and no people, no one like cares, they become the Baal Batim of Jerusalem, you know, or of Eretz Yisrael, or a large part of Eretz Yisrael. See, that was an amazing night. Then people in America, there are a lot of rich Jews. That's an American night. Amazing night. But Rav Pleshinsky said, the biggest Hashgacha process of World War II was what? I said this already many times, so people probably should know it already. What was the biggest Hashgacha process? Not that they got Eretz Yisrael after the war, and not that they became Jews in no time, became very rich and powerful. But the biggest Hashgacha was what? No. He said no. What? Yeah, that the Shoah. He said that the Germans killed so many people. Because he said Hashgacha Pratis does not necessarily have to be for good. Hashgacha Pratis can be also for bad. That, the biggest Hashgacha Pratis, the clearest indication of Hashgacha Pratis. Because Hashgacha Pratis just means that Hashem treats, that you see Yad Hashem. You can see Yad Hashem when things go unusual good, and you see Yad Hashem when things go unusually bad. Also shows Yad Hashem. That the basic thing Hashgacha Pratis is to realize that Hashem is running the world. He says, if things go according to laws of nature, you don't see Hashgacha Pratis. If things don't go according to laws of nature, you see Hashgacha Pratis. The fact that it's bad, in your opinion, but that still shows, obviously, why that happened. He says the Holocaust was against all laws of nature. That's what he used to insist. That it made absolutely no sense whatsoever. The whole thing. He used to say, I've said this many times already, he used to say that Germany lost World War II because they were too busy killing the Jews. He said, does that make sense? He says, what did the Germans care? He said, the Germans killed my parents. Since my parents lived in some little village in the middle of Russia where you couldn't even get there by car because there was no road. You had to go through some kind of woods. It was a whole difficult trip to get there. He says, my parents are bothering the Germans. They live in this little dinky village. They don't speak a word of German. They live in Mamish, you know, they're a few hundred miles, more than by that, you know, away from Germany. They stick in the little dinny in the middle of the woods. What do the Germans care that my father is living there in the woods? You know, no, he has to stop World War II and give up, you know, stop, you know, sabotage his fighting the Russians. And he's fighting for who's going to control the world. And basically, if he loses, he gets clobbered and destroyed. And if he wins, he becomes the king of the whole world. And if he wins, he can kill the Jews later. You know, like, not such a rush. But no, he says he had to put World War II on hold because we got Zrizim, Makdimim, the mitzvahs. We got to go and search out some Jew in some village somewhere in the middle of Russia. And so he said that was such an amazing nace, such a mishigas in his head. Okay, guys, he's so crazy. Such a crazy thing. He says it can be... When you kill 6 million people, he says, in the Shugana. He says, I can only have, that's only a nace. Now, it's a nace for bad, but that's also a nace. Nace means that Klal Yisrael, Hashgacha Pratis means that Klal Yisrael is treated differently. It's sometimes treated differently for bad, good, and it's sometimes treated for bad. But either way, it's an indication that you're special. And Hashgacha Pratis means to realize two things. To realize that we're special, that Hashem treats us different than the Goyim, we don't follow the laws of nature, and that basically everything depends on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The laws of nature don't work for Klal Yisrael. Either we're on the top or on the bottom, right? Which is both not normal.
Hashgacha Pratis is the same thing as a miracle?
Hashgacha Pratis is a miracle of a Nais Nigla. A Nais Nigla means it's like the Purim story, where There is nothing of a miraculous in it against the laws of nature, but the coincidence of everything happening is so far-fetched when you put it all together. So, you know, like lightning strikes doesn't strike twice. Now, it's not a miracle if lightning strikes twice, but the odds that lightning would strike twice are very slight, so that things work out the way they're supposed to work out, exactly in a certain pattern. So he says, when you look at Klal Yisrael, and you see that either they're on the bottom, and or they're on the top, but they're just, you know, things don't just go normal by Klal Yisrael. Why are we always in the news? Well, Israel's always in the news. The Jews are always in the news. You know, they're just nice, be nice, quiet. He says, things, we don't follow the laws of nature. So that's Hashgacha Pratis. Hashgacha Pratis means that Hashem is calling the shots and is directing you. And he's not leaving you just to the typical laws of natural nature. So that is, when you see that, either for good or for bad. So he says, that's a tremendous chizik. So a person, what Plashinsky used to say, and that everyone said this, is that the way he's saying to you, you have to develop an ability to see Hashgacha Pratis.
Just in the eyes of me, but in the end of the day, everything's for the best.
Obviously, in the end of the day, but we don't understand why. Right. You know, that we believe Akash Paragu has a cheshbon. But, right.
What is the best for us, or like Christ as a whole?
I don't know. That's a different question. But the Maiza, I'm not answering these difficult questions. But the Maiza, the concept is you see. I think I told the guys this. Didn't I tell this? Didn't we do this? No? Sounds like you guys think I never said this before. Okay, why don't you shake your head? It sounds familiar, no?
Yeah.
I told you to start Rabbi Cohn, no?
Through money?
Not Rabbi Money. Okay. Rabbi Cohn had Lo Aleinu. Rabbi Shai Cohn had a son that was Nifter. I told you a story. I remember telling you a story. And when his son was Nifter, Rabbi Cohn said at the Levaya, he sent over a piece from Rav Plashinsky that basically, I don't want to get into it because I said it already, but his basic part was that his son was Nifter should all be Derech HaTeva. And in a certain sense, it's a chizik. Son would be Nifter, I'll be Derech HaTeva. Okay, you know, you feel bad, but this way, you're not okay. That would be bad. But when son's Nifter should be Derech HaTeva, you realize it's a chizik, because it shows you that Hashem is with you. Hashem goes ahead and treats you. Shalom be derech hateva. So there's a certain, in the sorrow, there's a certain simcha that you feel, you realize that Hashem's with you. It brings home the message that you're getting special hashgacha pratis.
How do you get the message that Hashem loves you?
You get the message that you're treated different than the goyim, because Hashem, and especially if something happened to you more unusual than most people, so it means Hashem is treating you special. Why does He treat you special? Probably because He loves you. Why is He treating you different? Why are you different than everyone else who go follow? Other people follow certain natural laws of nature, and you're treated in a different rules. So that shows He is special. Okay. It doesn't make, the fact that 6 million people killed does not make us happy. But the fact that 6 million people got killed proved to us that Jews, their fate is decided, is not left to the normal laws of nature. But rather, there's Hashgacha Pratis. And that should make you happy. Because when you realize that we really don't know what's good for us, we don't know what's good for us in the present. We believe there's an Oedem Haba. We don't know what's right. And we don't know. And therefore, if we hear that we're not left to the just natural laws of nature, where who knows, you know, but rather there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who does know what's best for us calling the shots, that does make you happy. So it's not that I'm happy that the guy died. But I'm happy what it shows to me. The Shoah proves to me that Klal Yisrael is being treated by, it's not, no other nation in the world, so they had a Shoah. In no other nation in the world, you know, and there's no reason, maybe some, you know, they were nice, they were the main people, Chashuva, German citizens. You know, my mother-in-law was a German citizen. They were proud Germans, and they were good citizens, and they were helping the country. There was no reason why anyone would want to kill them. And for sure, why anyone would want to go kill the Jews in Russia and in Poland and wherever else they were. The whole thing made no sense. So when you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is treating the Jews in a different manner than he treats the Hungarians and it means you're unique. That does make you feel good, because if you're there, that you really don't know Pshat in life. You don't really know what's good for you. You don't really know in the long run. Sometimes it is better for a person to die. Sometimes not. It could be millions of cheshbonos. I want to go over time. Rishiva told us, I don't know, whatever. What?
So we're saying there's no naturalistic explanation?
I don't say there's no. It's far-fetched. There's an explanation if you're ready for far-fetched possibilities. It's coincidence. It's all the luck of the Irish, right? But when you see Hashgacha Pratis, you're not supposed to say that's the chisaron. People say either people don't notice him, or if they do notice, they say, boy, am I lucky. This is my lucky day. You know, or they come up with other explanations. But the realization that we believe that the probable explanation is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Hashgacha Pratis. And that information, obviously, I'm sure Rabbi Cohen felt terrible when his son died. I'm not saying he didn't feel bad, but it's a bevas achas. You feel terrible that your son died, but he felt happy knowing that there's Hashgacha Pratis. So you can have a dual feeling at the same time. So the real fact that things happen to Klal Yisrael that are unique is Hashgacha Pratis. Anyway, what a person is supposed to do, I didn't get to it. One thing if we said is, I'm supposed to try and say Hashgacha Pratis. We mentioned, I'm sure we mentioned this previously too, that Rav Holminer says that an Eitzah for Bitochen, we said this, I remember pretty recently, is that you're supposed to daven even for little things. And Rav Holminer says that whenever, before you do anything, you should put in a little tefillah. Just like you go ahead and you work hard, you're playing basketball, even though it's relatively trivial. So just like you're going to work hard to win, so you should make a tefillah, Hashem, help me win. Because having davening for everything that you do helps bring out, is a mussar, besides that, the davening actually works, but it helps bring out the point that everything is beyond Hashem. So we said before you do anything, you should daven. That itself helps to have the bitachon. Okay.